Monday, the nation takes a moment to recognize service members for Veterans Day. Army Captain Will Swenson is one of those veterans. Swenson is also one of the most decorated Army captains in recent history. Last month, he was in Washington, D.C., where President Obama presented him with the Medal of Honor, the highest military honor. It's given for personal acts of valor above and beyond the call of duty. Swenson received this honor for his actions on September 8, 2009, during the Battle of Ganjar in Afghanistan. Today, he's back in Seattle, his hometown. I asked him what happened that day in 2009.
September 8th was what we call a joint combined operation. We were conducting an operation to reach out to a village that had been causing problems in the past, and we were trying to offer them a fig leaf and say, hey, here we are. These are the Afghans. These are your government soldiers. These are people who are here to provide security for you. If we can start a relationship, we have a good future ahead. If not, we'll come back with a lot more forces, and we'll do this the other way.
And you came under fire sporadically at first and then more intensely.
When we started to approach the village, we had essentially planned on either being engaged with gunfire as we entered the village or engaged with gunfire leaving the village. This time around, when we entered the village, we started to receive gunfire. And the fire rapidly escalated and became much more intense. And eventually, we had our forward element of Marines approximately 100 meters ahead of us. They and their Afghan partners had become pinned down and we thought stuck in a building.
You were calling for air support.
In Afghanistan, essentially what you do is you take immediate action when you come under fire. You always know what is up in the air at any given time. You request that support. And when the helicopters show up or when the aircraft show up, more often than not in Afghanistan, the fighters stop fighting.
So shortly after this fire got intense, you wanted to call in that air support to maybe suppress what was going on?
Well, there's an old saying. Any mission that's based on air support is a bad mission because planes crash, planes break, aircraft don't arrive when they're supposed to, bad weather, what have you. So you always plan on artillery. And artillery is something that you have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all weather. And our plan was if we encountered any sort of enemy activity, we'd immediately engage them with artillery fire and we put down a smoke screen via artillery. And that smoke screen would allow us to pick up and move off the battlefield without having to engage the enemy any further. We weren't there to fight that day.
Why did calling in the artillery not work? Why did you end up going to stage two, calling in the air support?
At that time, the rules of engagement in Afghanistan had come under review, and restrictions had been placed upon all combatants on the battlefield on how they used lethal force. That was as a result of a lot of piling up civilian casualties. For us that day, the rules of engagement prohibited us from putting the fires where we needed to put them. Essentially, because we were fighting in proximity of a village, the fires that we wanted and where we needed them to be, we were not allowed to put them there. And that allowed the enemy an opportunity to maneuver against us in a way that we did not expect.
How long were you asking for the air support before it finally arrived?
We had continually been given an update on the arrival of the air support, and it continued to be 15 minutes, 15 minutes, 15 minutes. This piled up to approximately an hour and a half. When we finally had the air support come on station, the enemy briefly took a hiatus from engaging us. But unlike previous times that we'd been engaged by the enemy in this area, they continued to engage us. They just took a brief hiatus from firing, and then they picked right back up again where they left off. And the reason for this was because they were utilizing the village for cover, and then they knew that the aircraft would not be able to engage them within the village.
And this is where your actions became quite extraordinary. There's even some video of it as the helicopter lands. You're running out, you're helping some of the wounded soldiers get back to that helicopter, and you don't have a helmet on. Why not?
I was working with the Afghan Border Police, and they're a paramilitary organization. They look much like a light infantry battalion. However, they don't wear helmets. And if you're the one guy on the battlefield hanging out with a bunch of Afghan Border Police that's wearing a helmet, you'll be the guy that they pick off because they know that's the advisor. And the advisor is the guy who brings the aircraft, the artillery, the medevac support, the communications. I'm the most expensive target on that battlefield that they want to take out. So if I don't look like them, I'm the target.
Interesting. So it's partly for safety that you weren't wearing that helmet.
Absolutely.
I'm speaking with former Army Captain William Swenson. He received the Medal of Honor from President Barack Obama for an action in 2009. Now, what took place then was kind of extraordinary. You were kind of going back and forth, and you were under fire from the other troops. And the story gets kind of incredible at this point in that you were doing these things that other people might not consider to do at all. But I've heard you being quoted, and you talked about it as being not something you were feeling or even thinking about. It was you were kind of on automatic pilot when the crisis came. Is that right?
As a leader in a military situation, you have to make decisions which are divorced of personal emotion and feeling. You have to make decisions that may cost some people their lives but may save a lot more. And those decisions have to be automatic. If you stop to think about them for too long, you'll get bogged down in the emotion and you start making bad decisions. Some of the decisions that we made, I look back on, and perhaps they were made in haste. For instance, when I returned to the battlefield with my colleague, we entered the ambush in an unarmored vehicle, and that was not the best choice. But based upon what we knew of the enemy in the past, when there were having aircraft on station at that time, that means overhead, we didn't think that they'd be still fighting, but they were. They were still engaging us heavily. But you make decisions based on training. You make decisions based on visceral instinct, but you cannot make a decision based on emotion.
There was a rather long delay between this operation and your awarding to you of the Medal of Honor. Why do you think there was such a long delay? What did it have to do with?
There seems to be some issue along the way, whether it be administrative or personal. And I believe that that's still being looked into. So we'll have to see what that turns out to be.
Administrative is administrative. There are mess-ups all along down the line. Why would it be personal?
I think that it's been noted a number of times that I made some choice comments about the lack of support on that battlefield that day. But part of that is a misunderstanding of culture. In the military, we have what's called the after-action review. And it's something that you do at the end of every single operation, whether it be moving from point A to point B, which point B being the chow hall, or conducting a major operation. All the participants come together, they discuss what happened, they discuss what went wrong, they discuss who made those mistakes, and you make sure that you don't make those mistakes in the future. But one thing that you always say in an AAR is no thin skins. And some of the choice comments I made were made in a classified document. And coming from the culture that I did in the military from combat arms, no thin skins. What I was saying I meant, and I believed that I said it in the appropriate venue.
Could you give us an example of one of those choice comments?
Well, unfortunately, they're expletive-laced, but at the time, I was dissatisfied with the manner in which the rules of engagement clouded the judgment of those who should have been giving me the fires that I requested, the artillery or the aircraft. A lot of the decisions that were made that day had to filter through an operations center who had the ultimate say. But by doctrine, myself being the ground commander, those were my decisions to make, and they should have just supported them. But because of the rules of engagement, the level of trust the battlefield commander had been delegated to a different level.
You're listening to The Record. I'm speaking with Will Swenson. Eventually, you're recognized for your heroism on the battlefield with the nation's highest honor, the Medal of Honor that you were given by President Barack Obama. But I understand the matter is not entirely settled in your mind.
Awards are another unique part of military culture. They don't represent a raise. They don't represent anything other than brass and ribbon. And it's the value that we place into that brass and ribbon, whether as a military or as a nation. These are awards that are greatly important to the participants of that battlefield, especially when you start talking about the high-level award that I received. But you have to understand in the context of the military that what I did that day, I did as a team. I did with fellow Marines and Army and Afghans side by side. And the actions that I exhibited that day, I can tell you that there were people right alongside me the entire way who exhibited something very similar. So it's very difficult for soldiers to look at their accomplishments in the form of an award and say, yeah, that was me. I did that. These are my accolades. This is my Oscar. It's different. It's part of a team dynamic. Nothing happens in a vacuum in the military. There's always somebody out there to support you.
But you feel as though the military owes you an apology for the way that action went down?
I never looked for an apology, and I still would never look for an apology. Back to the AAR, the After Action Review.
Yeah.
What you do is you identify what went wrong, who made the mistakes, and you ensure that the corrections are made so it never happens again. I still have friends that are serving downrange. They're still in harm's way. And I can't accept knowing that the mistakes that cost 5 American lives and 10 Afghan lives that day would be allowed to continue in the future. We need to learn from our mistakes and move on. So it's not the Army that even needs to apologize or look to correct these actions. It's individuals who are in charge, the commanders.
And that has not changed. That's the same way that it was when this action took place.
Where are we now, several years later? It's changed. They have put in place a number of caveats that state that the ground commander is always correct. However, we're still trying to prevent civilian casualties. And there never should have been a question about the prevention of civilian casualties. But we needed to ensure that the ground commander, the guy who's asking for those rounds to be on target, gets what he needs and that we trust him.
I can't imagine the intensity of what you went through, both in this experience and other experiences I'm sure that you had. How's your adjustment to civilian life been, leaving something of that intensity and coming back to relatively placid Seattle?
When you're in the military, you're in an environment surrounded by a number of people doing the exact same job you are. Whereas being shot at might not be a day-to-day activity here in Seattle, it is when you're in Afghanistan. So you place things in context. I feel fortunate in that I can always separate what happens on a battlefield from what happens back home. I love being home. I love the Pacific Northwest. I'm happy here. I'm glad that we don't have to have a battlefield in our woods, in our mountains. And I still feel for my Afghan friends who are overseas and the Afghan people. But those are two very distant places.
You know, I think I've heard that the situation in the place where this engagement took place has not really changed that much on the ground. There hasn't been a big military victory or a change. And I'm sure that you're approached as a Medal of Honor winner by young people who might be interested in pursuing a career in the military. And how do you talk to them about the work that you did? How do you encourage them to take the path that you took?
Just today, the first person in Seattle recognized me. And he came up to me in the parking lot, and he was discussing whether or not I hold any animosity against my former employer, because he was looking at going into the military. And what I told him was, it's your path. It's going to be your experience. And what I know about the military is it's nothing but fantastic individuals, but like every organization, you have one or two bad actors. And this is an organization that does things that are unique. It's not tangible what we provide. I mean, we provide freedom, security, but ultimately, it's something that gives you personal satisfaction knowing what you've provided for the country, for your family, and it's that that guides your path.
That's Army Captain Will Swenson, Medal of Honor recipient. Veterans Day is Monday.